everybody. Welcome to 500 Open Tabs. I'm Kaveh Taharian.
And I'm Hannah Hillam.
And welcome back to the show. That was quite the episode last week, wasn't it?
It was.
Do you even remember what it was?
We don't. No.
Last week was when we had Alyssa on.
I thought it was the live stream. Oh, good. You're right. Alyssa was here. That was really fun. Our first guest.
It was fantastic. We were really excited. And then after we recorded that episode, we went to Emerald City. And then Alyssa told us that she had tap dancing classes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We've become obsessed with the idea that Alyssa's a tap dancer and we can't stop talking about it.
I can't stop thinking about it. Whenever I think about Alyssa, I'm like, she's tap dancing. So like, for example, we were sitting in our booth at Emerald City and Kaveh was just like, do you think Alyssa's tap dancing right now?
Right like, now?
Probably. You said that.
I did.
Something like that. Like,
I kept thinking about it. I was like, because she's never mentioned it to us before.
No.
I don't know why she would have mentioned it, but she was like, I'm sorry I can't come to the live stream. I have tap. And we were like, what?
You're tap dancing? This is a whole new like Alyssa lore that we've never heard of.
I don't know why I was so excited by Alyssa tap dancing.
It made your day.
I just wanted to cheer for her. I just like want. I hope she has one of those, you know, what do they call them? Assembly, like a performance.
A performance. You should go to
performance. I was like, if she has one. And now I feel like Alyssa's like, I'm quitting the show. You've embarrassed me. Now you've told everybody that I'm a tap dancer.
I mean, I'm sure there's dozens of tap dancers that listen to this.
There are dozens of us. Dozens.
Dozens. Yeah, no, I'm obsessed with that too. And it was a crazy week. We had a fun week.
We did.
Emerald City.
Of course,
thanks for coming to the booth, some of you.
Yeah, this is, of course, weeks later now because
unlike
how we run the rest of our lives with this podcast, we seem to actually be ahead of schedule, which never happens.
Yeah, it's actually kind of scary.
You're like, scared of being ahead of schedule?
A little bit, yeah. No, it's like I'm unnerved by it because it's like, well, when am I going to stop, you know?
Right now, it's already collapsing.
Oh, good. That's what I've been waiting for.
This is people ask like what it's like to have a show with two cartoonists, and I said
people ask you that.
People ask that. They're like, "How would you have a? Isn't that weird to have you guys have a podcast?" And I'm like, "No, actually, because Hannah and I have both done. What do we do? We did daily comics, or we've done like weekly or whatever. So like, you and I have this ability to sort of crank out stuff like fast.
I don't know how good it is. It's something.
It's there. I don't know how good it is, but we do deliver on time.
We do. And if that's one thing about me is that I can be consistent if I want to.
Yes. And I'm glad that you want to for this. But anyway, that's about all we have to update on, I believe.
Yeah.
Unless you have anything else, but should we just get into our tabs of the week?
With that voice.
I don't know what that voice was, but I'm going to keep doing it.
That's like a late night radio voice.
Hey, welcome back to the 500 Open Tabs podcast. I'm your host, Kaveh Taharian. And this week, we're going to be talking about all kinds of fun things.
Do it. Go. Do the whole thing like that.
The whole time.
I think I'd zone out. I'd completely zone out. Sorry.
I can tell. What did we do? So last week, I think you,
I went first.
Alyssa went first, but you went before I did. Okay. So I'll go first this week.
You go first. Okay.
Let me pull up my tabby cat. This one. So for this tab, I was going to start, usually I start with like the article title and like the writer and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I mention the title of the article, it sort of gives away what's funny about it. Not funny, but kind of where the story goes. It's kind of weird. So I think I'm just going to go into it and then I'll tell you what the article title was at the end because it basically just gives it away.
Sounds good.
But broadly speaking, this is going to be a tab about the Michelin guide. You've heard of this?
Yeah. These restaurants are good. Here's some stars.
Yes, exactly. The Michelin guide, that very same one. It actually has origins that are not about restaurants. I don't know if you knew this or not.
Maybe a little bit.
You did know this or you did not know this? A little bit. How much do you know about Michelin? Do you know the history of it? Do you know where it started? Do you know who started it?
Michelin sounds French. I'm guessing it might be French.
Ding, ding, ding. Yep.
Oh my gosh. And it had a guy. Their mascot is a big tire man.
Yes.
And it has something to do with the tires, right? Is it the same? I found out that it's the same company.
Yeah. That's it. That's my tab. I don't even need to address it anymore. I think you basically...
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
delete that.
No, no, no. It's correct. It's correct. I'm joking. It's not.
Cool.
No, that would have been the shortest tab imaginable if I was just like, yep, that's it.
Did you know it's French?
That's it. Just paragraphs and paragraphs of, did you know it's French? Just on repeat, page after page.
It's like, oh, he's lost his mind.
Lost him.
No,
when did
so
I have it?
That's about all I know about the Michelin guy.
Yeah. So the Michelin Man. Okay. So I'm going to tell you the history of how it started and what led to the context of what this article is about. So.
Cool.
The Michelin company started in 1889 when brothers André and Edward Michelin founded their tire company in Clermont-Ferrand, France. They had taken over their father's farm equipment company, and it wasn't doing so hot. It was kind of okay. Like, their dad had this company, and they're like, okay, I guess we're running it. We're chilling. We're doing one thing. And then one day, someone with a flat tire on their bike came by and was like, can you fix this tire for me? And they're like, yeah, sure, why not? And at that time, changing tires for a bike was kind of a pain in the ass because they were all, like, glued together and stuff.
Oh.
So you had to, like, put in some weird, like, bond loosener thing and then break it off and then, like, fill the air back up and then, like, super glue it back together. And so the whole process takes, like, basically, like, an evening. Like, if you brought it in at, like, 5 p.m., the guy wouldn't be able to, like, take his bike back till the next day.
Oh, wow.
And so Edward was sitting there and he was sort of like, you know, this process kind of sucks. It's not very efficient.
And I'm bored of farm
and
equipment.
And I'm bored of farming equipment. And so he's like, somebody ought to build a tire that works. And somebody did. And that's just, that's a Simpsons
Yay.
Reference. Yay.
Oh,
do you remember when they go?
It was one of those things where, like, it's in the back of my head. But like I said, at convention, my memory was zapped with COVID. And so I, like, vaguely remember everything, but not fully.
This is important information that you needed to remember.
I know. I'm like, my Simpsons cred is gone.
It's the episode with Hank Scorpio where Homer gets hired to work at that other plant. Remember when he works for the supervillains?
Yes.
And he's watching the video telling them go to the town. And they're like, somebody ought to build a town that works. And then everything, like, transforms and, like, the homeless people turn into, like, post office boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay, I really need to rewatch everything and re-memorize things because I'm sick of not knowing what you're saying.
I don't know what I'm saying either. That makes two
I know,
of
but
us.
You're always, I re-listen to one of our other episodes and I'm like, so much just went over my head. Like, thing after thing. And I'm just sitting there like, trying to, like, follow. Anyway.
You're more polite than my wife. Sarah just, like, is like, yeah, whatever. Can you get to the point? I'm tired of these references that I don't understand. And I'm like, fine. Anyway, so the Michelin brothers, they decided to do something about it. So in 1891, Michelin took out its first patent for a removable pneumatic tire. As you and I were texting yesterday, because you were like, I went down some deep dive, and I'm like, I had to stop myself because I had found some long PDF about, like, the history of tires and what a pneumatic tire is versus, and I was like, this is not relevant to the story. I need to stop this, but
it kind of is. What is the difference between a pneumatic
basically,
tire?
Basically, it's just tires with air in them is sort of the extremely condensed version of it. It's not super important to the story, but I just was curious about that, and I'm like, I kind of want to read all about tires and how tires work and do that, but again, self-control. I decided to scale it back.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm going to go look it up later, but
Yeah, I think I might. I still have the PDF. I didn't delete it.
Of course not.
I'm leaving it in my back pocket. So they make this patent for a removable pneumatic tire, and it's used by a guy named Charles Tarrant to win the world's first long-distance cycle race. The 1981 Paris-Brest-Paris race. And that
1981?
Becomes... 1891.
He spent 100 years.
100 years bicycling. It was not the best tire. It took a really, really, really long time. And by the time he got to the end, he was so old.
He was 100.
He started at 1 year old, which was part of why it took so long, because you're not supposed to, as a
He's
newborn,
a baby.
Learn how to bicycle.
Yeah.
But he got there eventually. This kind of puts them on the map, and it makes them very popular. They're like, oh, cool, we have this crazy, cool pneumatic tire. It's a great big hit. And initially, they were just doing bike tires, the Michelin brothers.
Okay.
But pretty soon, Eddie and Dre were like, you know, cars are kind of this thing now. They're kind of gaining popularity. Maybe we should get in on the ground floor of that.
They also have tires.
And at the time they started this and they made this decision, it's kind of crazy because in like most of, I think all throughout France, there's only about 3,000 cars on the entire road, like in the whole country.
Oh, wow.
So it's very early on in it. But they had a plan, and this plan was about to gain traction.
Oh my goodness. I'm not giving you that one. I'm not. good one.
And so they have this plan. They're like, we're going to take this company to the next level. So the first thing they do is they start branding the company. And what do? This is where the Michelin man comes in.
Yeah, where'd he come from?
I'll tell you exactly where he came from.
Oh, I'm so excited. He's so scary.
He came from, right? It gets insane. It's actually really funny. I keep calling him Eddie and Dre, by the way. Eddie. Yeah. Eddie had seen a stack of tires, and to him, it looked like a person without limbs.
Okay.
And he's like, I wonder if there's a there. So in 1898, the Michelins hired a French cartoonist who went by the name O'Gallop. Okay. He went by one name. That was his pen name. And when they met, O'Gallop showed them a rejected poster he had made for a Munich brewery, which depicted King Gambrinus, a legendary European culture hero celebrated as an icon of beer, brewing, joviality, and joie de vivre.
Wow. French.
French, right.
Now I notice how much I say wow. Ever since I started this podcast, it's like all I do is go wow. Wow. It sounds kind of sarcastic.
You're like Owen Wilson. Wow.
I'm the Owen Wilson of podcasting.
Oh my God, what an honor, honestly.
You need to break my nose so I can also look like him. Please don't break my nose.
No, I have an Owen Wilson action figure right here.
What? Is he sitting on a rubber duck?
He's sitting on the carp. This is the mascot for the baseball team in Hiroshima, the carp. And I've never seen.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I was just so excited that there was an Owen Wilson action figure. This is from Loki that I had to purchase.
Within reach.
I keep him at my desk for inspiration.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a good Owen Wilson.
Wow. Anyway, so this poster, in this poster, the king was shown announcing, it's in Latin, it says, Nunc est bibendum. How is your Latin?
Not good.
Not good. Okay.
No.
So I didn't know if that was like another secret thing that you had. It wasn't so much that I expect you to know it. I was
Nunc means like nobody or something or none.
I think it's now. So Nunc est bibendum is now it's time to drink.
That's what it says
on the poster.
Yeah.
Bibendum is like imbibe, I think.
Yeah.
That was written at the top of the poster. So basically the Michelins look at this poster and they're like, hell yeah, this is great. Just swap the king out with like our tire dude, and then just like CGI the fish, and let's fast track this one.
Tire dude, limbless tire man.
So they gave him limbs.
Oh, they did.
They gave him arms.
I guess so.
Because so if you look at let me text it to you. This is the original poster, which for our listeners who are not viewers who are listening to the audio form, please go ahead and explain it to them.
He looks like it's like this like overlord made of bike tires coiled up. He's got like glasses on and his mouth is opening, but it's just hollow inside. It's just opening up and you can see inside his hollow little tire body. He has a human hand and he's holding what looks like a salad in a bowl.
And he's got a ring on, which means he's married, which I think is very funny.
He is wearing a wedding ring and also a pinky ring, which means he's a douchebag and he's married.
Or a gangster.
Could be
one of those.
Oh my gosh, who's the guy next to him?
I don't actually know what that is, but he looks terrifying. I think these are more tire people.
I don't know. Oh, there's two different tire people. I'm obsessed with this. One of them looks like he has the bubonic plague. He's got those like pustules. Yeah, it's actually really upsetting.
Yeah. So
I don't like
the reason you don't like it. I'm sorry.
No, I don't like him. I don't trust him.
The glass is not a salad. The glass is actually the cup. It's pieces of glass and a nail and like nails. So the implication is that this guy could just drink whatever. And so it's like our tires are so awesome that like our tires just drink nails and pieces of glass and we don't give a shit. Like we'll just blast through it because our shit's hardcore.
I love that.
Yeah, it's insane. So we're like, they're like, our Michelin tires will drink up any obstacle on your way. We have a long straw.
Genius.
I also love that the thing that heartens me about this story is that this illustrator had done all this work and he made a poster and it got rejected. And then someone else used it and became famous, which that never happens. Think of stuff that we've done as illustrators. We're like, I thumbnail something or I present, and they're like, no, we don't want this. We want something terrible.
And I throw it away.
Yeah. So good for this guy. He got it to be this iconic thing. It's really exciting. It got a second life.
He got enough money
to
maybe pay for rent one more month.
Yeah. I think he becomes their illustrator for a while. He ends up drawing a bunch of their Michelin ads. And so the Michelins are like, great, we have a terrifying tire monster who's drinking nails and pieces of glass.
Hardcore.
What's the next step in our conquest for world domination? They're like, how do we get people to buy more tires, right? And so they come up with this plan. They're like, okay, what do we do? They're spitballing. They're like, what about cars with 12 wheels? No, that probably won't work. That seems a little bit strange. What about tires that explode after one use? They're like, that's a little bit dangerous. I don't know. What if we go around slashing tires at night when people are asleep so that they'll be forced to buy new ones?
They have to buy ones.
They have to buy ones. They're like, listen, I love the enthusiasm. It's not really a great idea. It's not quite working out. We got to figure out something better. And so they come up with this plan. And it's kind of a genius plan, actually, I have to say. And they realize that what about applying psychology to the product? And they decide that cars are now about freedom.
Oh,
ever heard of it? In America, it's called freedom.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
So it's about the freedom to go anywhere and see anything. And so the Michelins were determined to turn vehicles from a novelty that took drivers to a Sunday picnic to a viable mode of transportation over long distances.
Oh.
And so they began to produce travel guides in the year 1900. Starting with a guide to France that was handed out to motorists for free.
Interesting. I see where this is going. This is cool. Okay.
It's cool, right?
Yeah.
So, and then within a decade, they include roadmaps. And these books and maps entice drivers to explore the country, making detours to appealing restaurants and staying somewhere overnight to lengthen their travels. So it's like, here's this cool hotel. Here's this cool restaurant. Here's this awesome whatever, like, you know, this gas station and pharmacy that you can go to. So it's kind of like, for those of you who have only grown up on the internet, it's like a paper blog from 130 years ago.
A blog is also very outdated.
That's true. A paper TikTok. And at this time, like I said, so cars were just kind of becoming a thing. Bikes, of course, were not great for going huge long distances. And trains could only take you to certain spots, obviously. So the idea was like, take your car, go see this awesome restaurant, go stay in this hotel, go to this place, go to that place. And it essentially catches on and becomes like a pretty popular thing. And of course, the money starts to roll in because people are driving, they're buying Michelin tires, they're getting flats, all kinds of stuff's happening. And it's great. It's very successful. And this continues until World War I.
Oh, okay.
And World War I destroys a lot of things.
It ruins a lot of things. It kind of starts
it ruins
off everything.
Lot. It kind of, the entire world is a war.
Yeah.
And
we've kind of been since. Whatever.
Right. kind of, things were great. And so World War I, they stop for obvious reasons. They're not really producing anything because no one's able to go to restaurants and do anything.
Right.
And by the time World War I ends, they come back and they sort of take stock of these guides and they take stock of their company and they take stock of what the public's sort of relationship with this guide is. And Dre was like, you know, it's still not enough. It needs to be more. We need to really kick this up. We need to really go with a little bit more prestige and we need to make this thing like kind of undeniably great. So initially in the earlier versions of it, it came with ads because whoever in the area that you wanted to go see was able to put ads into the Michelin guides. They decide to forgo that. And they say, we're not going to give it away for free. We're going to start charging for them. And I think it starts at about around 7 francs at the time, which I didn't look up inflation, but it's not too expensive. But basically, if something's worthwhile, you'll pay for it.
Right.
And they also start to expand and do all this other stuff with it. So the first thing they do is they take out the ads. Second thing they do is they say, you know, the restaurant section seems to be pretty popular with people. People are really into it. They really like that it's sort of getting them on the road and getting them to go to different places. And what they do is they say, okay, we're going to take the restaurant section and we're going to start like subdividing them into like whatever, different kinds of cuisine and all that. And then they also introduce, this is where they introduce the star rating. So the Michelin star rating becomes, that's how it starts.
That's where it came from.
It starts with one star initially, which is just like, this is a place that we sort of give our stamp of approval that you should go to.
And it's just arbitrary? They're just like, this is good. We like it.
No. So also at this time, they hire, which I didn't know this, but it makes sense. So they hire their first batch of like, I guess there's just like anonymous people that go review the restaurants.
Oh, like critics.
Yeah. And then they report back to the guide. But I guess you're not supposed to know, which makes sense, because if you know that the critic is coming in, you're going to be like, oh, it's like Ratatouille. I'm going to make you like the fanciest, best dish imaginable and like go overboard on it.
Bring our best rat chef in.
Bring our best rat chef in to serve you rat poison and food.
Would you eat? Hang on. Here's a question.
Would I eat rat poison?
No.
Yes.
I might too. Just to see what happens. No. Would you eat something prepared by Ratatouille? not Ratatouille, the rat.
The rat?
His name's Remy. Remy. Like with his rat hands. Like if he made Ratatouille with his little rat. You wouldn't?
I don't think I would. Because I don't know. Because he's from the French country. If he had been like a lab rat that was born in lab captivity and was like sterile and clean and like not diseased.
I mean, he'd wash his hands.
I don't actually know enough about rat biology to know like how disease. I guess it's only if you get bit by a rat. I don't actually know, right?
I'm asking a question that has no answer.
I don't know. I'm sure somebody who's a listener who loves rats or knows rat biology, please let us know either in the comment section or write us an email, 500opentabs@gmail.com.
If a rat made us dinner, could we eat it?
Could we get poisoned or get the plague or get like a disease from it? Or is it fine as long as it just like sprays his hands with, whatchamacallit?
Cool. The stuff. the stuff that they give us. The pandemic. What's it called?
The hand sanitizer.
There we go. There it is. Hand sanitizer.
Or I guess you could make little rat gloves and then that would prevent
it
from ever touching.
On?
I mean, if he's a chef, I assume that he's very good at it.
He's trained.
He's going to wear an apron. Yeah. If you can figure out a way where it's sterile and sanitary, I'd be willing
try
it.
Rat food made by a rat.
I would try it.
I think I'd eat the whole thing. I love rats.
You would eat rat food as well?
Absolutely not.
No, you wouldn't. I don't mean, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Cuisine prepared by a rat.
I was like, I'm not eating rat food. Yeah, I would. If it was made by a rat that I raised. Okay, we have to be done. Okay, I have to be done with this. Go. Please continue.
So this is when, like I said, so just to sort of recap. They introduce the star rating. They introduce the ratings. They introduce the anonymous group of people who go around reviewing the restaurants throughout Europe. They didn't start introducing three stars until 1931. That's when that became a thing. So it's like the different levels of it. Which, again, this is not about the star ratings. That's not important here for this story. But so it basically started to really blow up. And in addition to that, they started to get a lot of money for it. And they're like, okay, things are getting real. People are liking these restaurants. This map section that we have. Let's go like hardcore on this too. So what they start to do is they start to hire some of Europe's best cartographers, like, and then updating it every year. So every year, the best cartographers in all of Europe are like taking track of Europe. They're keeping, because there's no Google Maps, right?
Well,
there's no like weird automated car going around, driving around, updating it. Somebody actually had to go and like look and draw it on and then be like, okay, well, there's this new hill here that they built from this or whatever.
That'd be
and
a fun
every year
job.
They would update it. I think it would be a lot of fun, yeah. I think these days you can't do it, unfortunately, but at that time it was a lot of fun to go around and do it and you're drawing and seeing stuff. And it became a serious thing, and it became very prestigious, and it was... I mean, at this point, when we were kids, it would have been the Thomas Guide, right? That's what we would look at before. But in Europe at the time...
Spread it out across the dashboard. Parents arguing while you sit in the back waiting for them to figure out where to
fighting.
Go.
So these maps become very important. And guess who likes these maps as well, in addition to everybody who has cars and stuff?
The restaurants?
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
It's a group of people who are dickless and fascists, and they're murderers, and they
the
suck,
Nazis?
And they're led...
Not the Nazis! Oh.
So this is a rumor, I should say. I couldn't find any like substantial specific... Some
dickless.
People said this in like random stuff, but I didn't find like an article that specifically like can source this, but I think it's safe to assume that it's probably true.
Yeah. They do like very orderly maps and stuff.
Yeah. And they're like, hey, how do we, these are really good maps and these are really good guides. We should use them to aid us in committing some of the worst atrocities in the history of humanity because we are scum.
Oh, no. This just took such a turn. Okay.
Dark turn. This is the rumor. The rumor is that they use these guides as a way to sort of take over the rest of Europe. Can't confirm this. I'm sure it's written in a World War II book of something somewhere, but I didn't find any like internet ready. What's the word I'm thinking? Source about it.
Right. Oh, I'm sure. I mean, if it was there, they used it. That's
I'm
the thing.
Sure. Yeah, I doubt that they would have just used it, especially because, like you said, it's so OCD already and like already has enough prestige and is very good. It wouldn't have made sense for them to send out their own scouts to like redo it if they already had something.
Right.
Anyway, so these pieces of shit who should all be dead and people should not listen to them, especially now.
Ever.
I can't believe they're back ever.
I cannot believe they're back. And people are like, this sounds pretty good. It's like,
just die. I hate you.
The Nazis should have died a long time ago. Anyway.
Yes. These
controversial
shit,
opinion.
Yeah, hot take.
Hot take. We don't like Nazis here at 500 Open Tabs. And we think they shouldn't exploit the Michelin maps.
Yes.
I'm making that my platform.
Yes. So they're trucking along, being awful, ruining humanity. Uh-huh. Until 1941, when your boy, what was his name? Nishikaichi. He comes in and bombs.
Bombs Pearl Harbor. Solo,
bombs
by
Pearl
himself.
Harbor by himself. And then America enters World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So when America enters World War II, shit gets real, right? Now America's in it.
Yeah.
And they're getting hype. They're like, you know, they're building whatever, ships. They're changing all the factories to make other stuff.
Making all the women build the ships, yeah.
Making all the women, putting all the Japanese people in jail and destroying their lives.
For no reason besides
for
fear.
For no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the things we're good at.
Yeah. Yeah. Oppenheimer is out there competing with Barbie to make the first Mojo Dojo nuclear bomb.
Yep.
It's a wild time. And as they're doing all this, they start to plan the D-Day invasion. The Americans do.
Yep.
So according to the intel, the Nazis, in addition to being horrible pieces of shit who should all be dead at all times throughout humanity and throughout the history of the human race, they started to tear down road signs in an attempt to confuse people who come into Europe and different countries. Basically, remember in like the old Looney Tunes cartoons where they would like tear down the road sign and be like, the road goes this way, but it actually like sends you off a cliff. That's
off
what these
cliff.
Idiots started doing.
Did it work?
And they were like, people who came to France if they didn't know what France was and they didn't know the road signs, then they would have no idea where anything is and be able to get around. And they realized that this would be a problem for Americans who are storming the beaches of Normandy and coming into France. Because number one, Americans are already bad about leaving America in the first place.
Yeah.
And number two, men don't want to ask for directions, famously.
No.
And, you know, also, they're not going to be excited to go to France. They're like, ew, escargot? Gross. I'll have a cheeseburger.
I just want hot dogs. Just going down my throat.
Burgers and hot dogs. That's all we want.
Yeah.
Much like what had happened during World War I, the Michelin Guide had not been printed for a few years. Basically, 1939 was the last year they had printed the most recent edition.
Well, wasn't that when France was taken over, 1939? Probably
I believe,
why they stopped.
Yeah. That
doesn't matter.
Right. No. It's a good question. I think that's probably the reason why. Yeah. It all blends together to me for like 39, 40, 41, 38. Are you looking it up?
Yes, of course I am. I can't think. Okay. I can't think if I don't.
No, it's okay. It's a good question. I assume that's a good extrapolation to make, though.
Oh, 1940, May 10th. So they must have just been like, things are getting real. Can't print this anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And the Nazis were like, yoink, we'll take it over.
As they cartoonishly unscrew a sign and put it on upside down.
Yeah. Ooh, we're Nazis. Look at how cool we are.
Look how evil. Actually, they're extremely evil.
Yeah, they are.
They're
and
horrible.
They're dumb.
Stupid.
And awful. Anyway,
and
so
we should punch all of them.
We should punch Nazis. So 1939 was the last year that they put out the Michelin Guide.
Okay.
And In order to make sure that the D-Day invasion and the liberation of France would be a success, the U.S. government approached the Michelin Corporation, because I guess they had somebody in the States or something, and they were like, listen, we're about to go in and get slaughtered, and we don't know where any of these signs are. We're going to need you guys to reprint the guide.
No way.
And so Michelin's like, thumbs up, hell yeah, screw the Nazis, let's do it.
Yes.
So they do it. They reprint the 1939 edition, and I couldn't find out exactly who got them. I assume a lot of soldiers got them, because they're all going to need guides. It's not just like, oh, sorry, like only your sergeant has this. I feel like everybody probably would have gotten one.
Dude, so off topic, kind of, not really. My husband's grandpa was there. He lived
on D-Day?
He helped liberate France. And now I'm like...
You should ask him.
Oh,
if he's still alive?
Super
dead.
He's
long dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rest in peace, Bob. He was awesome. But he, I wonder if he has like, we have some of his old like World War II stuff.
Oh,
like,
that would be so crazy.
Maybe I'll ask his children if they, what if he had one? That'd be so cool.
Oh my God. That would be amazing. So on June 6th, 1944, Allied forces carried their handy tourism guides with them across the beaches of Normandy.
Wow.
So literally, I know you haven't seen it, but I'm assuming you are at least aware of Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, and I get it. I know what it's about.
So like the opening of Saving Private Ryan, that horrific scene where they're storming the beach, they've all theoretically got like Michelin guides in their backpacks.
Can't wait to eat at this restaurant after this.
Of course, they take over they win that battle, and they use these guides all the way to Paris.
What?
And then Paris is liberated on August 25th, 1944. And on that day, Michelin's Boulevard of Itineraries went back to work because they had been liberated.
Okay, that's wild. I didn't even
crazy?
Know. Yeah.
And this time they were cranking out maps of northern France, Belgium, and Germany for the Allies to use. So this continues, and they end up aiding the Allies as they work their way across Europe to try to kill the loser dickhead dropout who sucks and killed himself because he's a giant coward.
I've never heard him described as a dropout until now, and on behalf of dropouts, we're not all like that, but absolutely he's a dropout. He's an art school dropout.
Couldn't hack it.
No,
he would not
you know
be
what?
Welcome on our podcast.
So am I, and I didn't.
You didn't you
kill
didn't
11
destroy
million
Europe
people.
And commit genocide as a result of it? Go to therapy. Postscript, we won World War II, and the Nazis lost because they're wrong and stupid and should all be dead.
And it should be left at that.
Yes.
So, and, you know, no genocide. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, so that's basically more or less where I wasn't going to go like too much into the entire history of the Michelin guide, but I just thought it was funny that they straight up, it
helped
led to that
win.
Point. Helped us win. They also helped the Nazis win initially, but totally unintentionally.
Yeah.
So Michelin, I should be clear, Michelin didn't help them deliberately in any way.
Right.
It just was like an unfortunate circumstance that happened as a result of them
they
making
deliberately
this awesome map.
Were on the right side of history.
They were on the correct side of history.
Wow. I'd love to get my hands on like an original, like a 1939.
Oh, it would be so cool to see.
Copy?
Yeah. So
dude,
I added
that
this
was exciting.
I added this one little thing because I just wanted to have this pun of miscellaneous facts.
So dumb. Okay.
In regards to what you're talking about the guide, the first one is, today there are only a few distinctions that separate an original 1939 Michelin guide to those reprinted by the U.S. War Department of the Allied Invasion of Europe. The American reprint is tinted slightly red, there is no tire insert, and the cover is stamped for official use only.
I want one.
Me too. I desperately want one.
So
if you have one,
gonna,
send them
I'm
to
gonna
us.
I'm going to ask my husband's family if... somewhere in some boxes, there might be some
imagine
stuff.
Imagine if they had it. That would be so crazy. I would melt down.
So my husband inherited his first aid kit that was like given out, and then his canteen, like those like ones you... And we have that on our bookshelf, but man, I want one of those Michelin guides.
Amazing to see it. It's a piece of history. A couple more miscellaneous facts.
Miscellaneous.
I was very proud of it.
I'll give you it.
The Michelin man is white because tires used to be all white.
I was going to say, why does he look like that?
He's literally a pile of white tires. And that's why he looks like that. He initially also had a monocle and was always drawn with a drink in his hand until eventually they realized, oh yeah, drinking and driving probably isn't a good idea for us to be promoting.
But drinking and drive, or drinking nails and
tires.
Glass and driving.
I'm sorry, nails and glass. Yeah, that's acceptable apparently. But
yeah,
not drinking and driving.
That's I have to so show you this funny.
One thing, just one more insane thing to show you, which this was my favorite poster, which I kind of want like a real copy of this because it's unhinged. But why don't you describe to the people what this poster looks like?
What? Okay. All right. So how do I start with this? It looks like somebody in their old-fashioned car has broken down, and the Michelin man with a gigantic cigar hanging out of his mouth is like offering up his stomach area where the dude who is driving the car is like, thank you. And he's like taking out one of the rings, one of the tires from the middle of his stomach. And everyone's happy. The kids are watching. The wife is like, ooh. And the husband is just delighted. And he's, you know, Michelin Man is happy with his sacrifice. He still has human hands.
He does. He's like, got a spare? Check it out. Just take it out of my rib cage.
Boink.
Yeah.
And the way he's like kind of thrusting a little bit is he's doing his job. And
this is amazing, though. I love this poster. I love all the old, totally insane Michelin posters.
I gotta find one of
posters.
These for you.
Yeah. They're amazing.
And just, it's funny because he has so many tires. He's made of so many tires.
So many tires, right? It's just like a stack of them.
Do you know why the tires were white? Is it just the color of the rubber or what?
That's a good question. I guess so. I actually don't know. I didn't look into that. I couldn't tell you. But if anybody knows, let us know.
Yeah.
Lastly, this part was cool. I didn't know. The word tire is a short form of attire. You like clothing? Like attire? Like your clothing?
Really?
From the idea that a wheel with a tire is a dressed wheel.
Weird. What? So why does it spell? They spell it differently in the UK.
T-Y-R-E. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's your department. You're the entomologist. No, you're the
entomology
person. Entomologist. You're the one who knows all that stuff. I'm not good with language. I'm good with story, but not with languagey stuff.
I'm not looking it up.
You're not.
Seriously.
While you're looking it up, I'll give you one last fun fact, which is after we liberated Europe and after, well, I should say not we, but the Allies liberated Europe and World War II was over, they published another Michelin guide, like, I think like 2 weeks later.
Oh, whoa.
So they're like, yeah, not everything's up to date, obviously, because half of Europe's destroyed, but here it is. So some people had like gone to some restaurants during World War II, which I couldn't find more information about this, but I'm sort of fascinated to be like, what the hell was that about?
What were they doing?
I don't know. I have no idea. But for a time after World War II, they didn't do 3 stars. They only did 2 stars because they assumed correctly that like restaurants in Europe aren't going to be able to get up to like a 3-star rating with like the quality of excellence because, as I said, everything's been destroyed. So I think it didn't come back till like either the late 50s, early 60s, somewhere around there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And
so
then that,
they give them a chance to rebuild.
Yes. So for a while, they're like, we'll let it slide for a little bit, but eventually you're going to have to bring it back up.
Wow. There it is again. Wow.
Wow.
Let me try something different. Interesting. That's fascinating.
Thus, that was my tab.
Oh, that was a wild ride.
Isn't it cool?
Ride. A car ride.
I gotcha.
I know. I needed to make sure.
I didn't actually get it right away. You had to say it the second time for me
to
get it.
Okay. Then I feel better.
Yes. I'm just not very perceptive.
Neither
am
I.
That's all this came down to. It's perfect. We work out.
Yeah.
We work great as a team.
We make a good team. I'm only perceptive in ways that don't matter.
Yeah.
Like listening to every conversation in the room, I'm like, oh, interesting.
Interesting.
But then when someone's like, my name is this, and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking
about. Deleted immediately.
Immediately deleted.
Immediately
thrown
deleted
away.
From my brain. Yeah. Doesn't matter. I don't even know this.
No. Look at us. We're doing good.
We're doing great. Anyway,
well,
yeah. Any
awesome.
Other thoughts on Michelin?
I just love that the tire company is also a restaurant raider. Like they also
it's
rate
genius.
Restaurants.
It's
like,
genius.
But when you put it, when you spell it out, it makes sense because it's like, yeah, duh, you're going to be driving around a restaurant. It's like Yelp, but like with a big scary tire man and paper.
Which I think you and I need to come up with a business idea like that, because we can basically make a rival guide, because where do people listen to podcasts? When they're driving or when they're walking or when they're going to places. So we should come up with a guide of like stupid crap for people to go see. And then it's far away and it takes them a while to get there. So they have to listen to 500 Open Tabs, this podcast.
That's actually kind of a good idea.
We should do it. We should come up with a dumb Michelin guide.
Like a road trip. 500 Open Guides? No.
Guides. That could work. 500 Open Places to Go. What would our rating be? We wouldn't have stars. We would have to have tabs.
We'd have wows. Wow.
That gets
two wows.
Three wows.
I could be fun because I love reading about crap on the road. Like if I'm driving, I go to roadsideamerica.com and I'm like, that's a giant chair I'm going to go sit in. Have you ever been there?
No, the giant chair or to roadsideamerica.com?
America is filled with giant things that shouldn't be giant.
Sounds like America.
They're everywhere. It does sound like America. They're everywhere. Like there's a giant ball of yarn.
That sounds fun. Sounds like a lot of cats would like it. No.
I don't know anything about cats.
Have you ever drawn a cat before?
No. I drew 89, by the way. I finally counted it up.
Oh, my God.
89.
That's a lot.
In 4 days.
Woo.
Yeah. And for the first time ever, I think you were there. You were there for all of this. Remember when I was like, I think I'm sick of these.
I don't want to draw cats anymore is what you kept saying. Yeah.
But I'm fine now. Anyway, that's a good idea.
Guide. Yeah. 500 Open Guides. I don't know. We're going to have to work on that name. We're going to work something out. But I think that's going to be our business idea to get more people to listen to the podcast and to all the episodes.
Hey there. This is Adreed Kaveh, here to give that poor little guy host Kaveh a break. Hannah and I would like to ask you for help by going to nebula.tv/500opentabs and signing up for Nebula, where they have exclusives like Why Our TVs Wanted to Kill Us in 90s Movies by Tech Alter. Ever notice that 90s movies were obsessed with evil media? Shows plunging societies into ruin, video games that trap and torture players, and VHS tapes that kill anyone that watches them? What caused this sudden obsession? These kinds of wonderful video essays never cease to amaze me. I had to get a master's and go countless thousands of dollars into debt. But you kids now? You can get an annual subscription to Nebula that gives you the same insights for the cost of a carton of eggs, at the time of this recording, probably. You can find this video and dozens of other high production originals on Nebula, a video streaming platform built by and for creators. And along with videos and podcasts, you can now learn new skills in Nebula's fully produced classes. Go to nebula.tv/500opentabs and get 40% off an annual subscription. By signing up, you can support other creators like Maggie Mayfish, Princess Weeks, and many more. Remember, sign up at nebula.tv/500opentabs. Otherwise, Hannah and I will assume you hate us and will cry, much like host Kaveh is doing right now from not being allowed to talk for a whole 2 minutes.
Anyway, so what do you got for us?
Well, couldn't be more different.
That's why we have this show.
Okay. My tab is it's a PDF from a university publishing company, University of California Press, and it is a document from the year 922 AD.
922?
Yes.
Like, not 1922, but like over 1,000 years ago.
Yes.
Whoa.
And
they had PDFs back then?
They did, and they were pretty much written on, I don't know, what did they use? Papyrus? The font papyrus. Anyway.
I interrupted you.
This PDF, this ancient PDF, was written by a man named Ahmad ibn Fadlan. So he wrote this journal entry. They call it his journal. And in Arabic, it is called a risala. And it means journal or diary or like an account of something or history. So Ibn Fadlan is this dude from Baghdad. And he was born sometime in the 900s. And this is his account, one of the very first and only accounts of the Vikings.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So I didn't realize this, but the Vikings didn't write anything. They were like, they would write their like stories
more
down
to burning stuff.
No, seriously, they did not put any like weight on written word or like stuff like that. They were all oral. They were all, it was an oral tradition. Okay. So they would tell these tales that were passed down, and they were written later. So like you hear about like Norse tales and stuff, and they're all they were all written later. And most of the things we know about the Vikings were written by their enemies. So all the Christian monks that were like pissed off that these giant blonde dudes were like, give me all your gold and I'm going to burn your house down. And so that's what we know about them, because those were the Vikings that were written about.
I like how it's had the inverse effect where they're just sort of like, let's write a story about how these dudes suck and they burn stuff down and they're
and
terrible.
Like,
and everyone's like,
yes!
Vikings are metal as shit.
They really
love those
are,
guys.
But most people just didn't, either didn't survive the encounter to write about it later because these guys were nuts, or it was secondhand, and it was mostly Christian and Muslim sources that would write, because they put a lot of, you know, they liked to write things down, scriptures and stuff. So Ahmad ibn Fadlan, he was what they called a fiqh, which is like a, it's like a theologian.
Yeah, yeah, I gotcha.
Theologian. He's like a theologian, like an expert in Sharia law and Islamic doctrine and stuff. And so he was hired by the caliphate, the current one in Baghdad, to go travel with these emissaries around like the Middle East and Southern Europe, or it's not Southern Europe, Eastern Europe, and be their person that would like write stuff down and like, you know, lead people with like religious discussion.
He's like a reporter. He's like a traveling reporter.
Kind of. But like that's really good at like theology.
Interesting. He's writing for the religious section of the New York Times.
He is for the Caliphate, the New York Caliphate.
Caliphate Times, yeah.
For a long time, we only had bits and pieces of his account. Mm-hmm. And they were mostly from other writers who referenced it as like, you know.
This is, I gotcha.
This is this guy, yeah. But in 1923... the entire manuscript was actually discovered in the stacks of the Central Library of Persian again. Help.
It's Persian
Astan,
or Arabic?
It's Persian. It's in Iran. Mashhad. It's at the library in Mashhad, Iran. This Iranian guy, this Persian guy was like, look what I found. I found this like buried deep in this library somewhere, which first of all, imagine how much else is in there.
Yeah, seriously.
And he got really excited about it, and everyone's like, dope, we have the full thing, and we're finally able to see all 420 pages of this guy's account of the Vikings. So let me go back to the Vikings a little bit before I get into the account, because the Viking Age lasted about, this is like the middle of the Viking Age, it lasted about like 790 through to the 1200s. So it was Middle Ages. It was a good, right? And the Vikings we know, we see like in TV shows with like the braids and they're all wearing like gray and white and black and nothing like that, sadly.
No, they wore a lot of sequins jackets.
They were glittery.
Bright scarves.
They were like David Bowie.
Their hair was braided, but like into very elaborate cornrows or something.
Beautiful.
I don't know.
Cultural appropriation.
They were so controversial. That's why people didn't like them. They were
the
trying
English
to cancel
like,
them, and they,
that's not what your hair should look
it's
like.
It's not appropriate.
As they burn their monastery down. Anyway, so they get a bad rap. They were actually not called Vikings at the time. They were called Norsemen, or Norsemen. They get a bad rap because, like I said, they robbed all these Christians and Muslims blind, and they were really mad about that. And they had
kind of
no...
understandable. I could see.
Yeah, I'd be like, I kind of did this whole like built this whole thing, and like, I kind of like God, and then you just came in here and stole all my stuff.
Kind of not that. Yeah, kind of burned it down a church or a mosque. It's probably not very kosher.
Not a good look. But they didn't care, and they had no respect for monotheism. They had no respect for symbolic stuff, because to them, the gods served them. They did not serve the gods.
Right.
They called upon the gods to help them do what they wanted to do. And they were very much led by that and led by glory and status like that. And so they would go into these places and steal a bunch of stuff. And a lot of people argue it's because they had a population boom in like the 600s, 700s.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And so no one had land anymore. or like stuff. And so all these young guys are like, let's go steal it. Like, let's invade England. Screw them. They got plenty of land.
I mean, I'm kind of on board with that. I think it's cool if they invaded England. I would like that.
They killed a lot of people.
I mean, I don't like people who are innocent getting killed, but I do like the idea of England being colonized. I think that's just funny.
Yeah, that's all it is. They got colonized hardcore for a long time.
Oh, did the colonizers get colonized?
Did somebody get colonized? Somebody get addicted to crack?
Hold on. Is the information that you just gave, was that stuff that they learned from the PDF, or that was...
No.
That's just from before.
I'm giving some context to the fact that we don't really know much about them besides they're scary. A lot of it's like exaggerated. Like, they didn't have horned helmets or whatever. That's like from that Wagner opera. You didn't know. They didn't.
I didn't know that. I want to say it was the fourth grade is when we learned about Vikings, like in school. And I haven't really done, admittedly, I haven't done a lot of Viking research since.
Interesting. That's where you and I differ. Yeah. I watched that Vikings show and I was like, how much is this is real? Because I'm the worst and love to suffer. And that's when I went deep into
this. I forgot about
that
show. It was like a big budget show too.
Yeah. I mean, they had they got a lot of the cultural stuff kind of right. Like the way they interacted with their deities and how women were treated, etc. But the aesthetics were very wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, so they would wear colorful things. They wouldn't have these horns. They'd have the regular iron helmets, because if you imagine being in battle, you have horns in your helmet. Someone could just grab them and pull you down. It's a stupid idea.
It's true. You said it was from the Wagner opera is where that idea came from?
Yep.
Oh, interesting.
And I only know that one because of Bugs Bunny. So, you know that.
Kill the rabbit. The rabbit.
Yes. Which I think was actually kind of poking fun at the Germans, too, because the Nazis loved Wagner.
Yeah. Failed ideology that should not be subscribed to at any point in history.
And if you ever start thinking, maybe they were onto something, you're wrong.
You are wrong. Objectively, you're incorrect.
Yeah, in every way. Anyway, we've really coming out really anti-Nazi. I hope I don't offend anybody. Kidding.
Listen. hope we don't offend any Nazis.
I don't want to like divide our fans. Yeah. Look, I know you guys. Anyway, point is, so this is kind of the Nazi. No, not Nazis. Vikings, which is sad because Nazis have taken a lot of Viking imagry, which sucks.
They stole a lot of imagery from everybody. In fact, they've stolen most of their things.
They're thieves.
Anyway, we're just mad about Nazis today.
I hate them. Look, I'm mad about nothing. And you said Nazis, so now I'm mad about Nazis because I have that. Do you ever have like that? I shouldn't even ask. I know this answer. Do you have that like unassigned rage inside of you at all times?
Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
I'm just looking for a place to focus my rage.
100%.
Absolutely.
That's what happens.
Only every single day of my life, Anna.
Every waking moment of my life.
Every minute of the day, yes.
Unassigned rage. I wish you guys could see, just like listen to us at the booth. Just what we say to each other. It's a lot of rage.
It's not a podcast, that's for sure.
It's not good. Yeah. So we're not our best on day three of a convention. Anyway.
So the Vikings did not wear horned helmets.
No,
I'm sad to find this out.
I know. It's a bummer, but...
Are they at least still braiding their beards and stuff?
We don't really know. There were signs of it. Like, the women would braid, like, ribbons and jewelry into their braids, but a lot of it was ceremonial and a lot of it was, like, dependent on what class you were, like, what social standing you
were.
Oh,
they had a class system. Oh, okay.
They
did, Or they had, like, a caste system?
A little bit, yeah. So,
oh, interesting. Okay.
There was like chieftains, and then it wasn't as like, we have fancy. I don't know. They had slaves.
Go ahead. Well, the Vikings did have slaves. I guess that's not surprising. Yes. Considering they raped and pillaged and murdered. They're like, that's the one thing that's too far.
Which was weird because they took these slaves, and so their slaves were actually extremely like diverse. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Like.
That makes sense.
They weren't the best people.
I'm like,
you know?
Is that good? They're like,
no,
yeah.
It's not, but we do get interesting accounts from like a Chinese slave that was taken by the Vikings.
By the Vikings.
which is like, okay, you guys can need to chill. How about, that's my hot take. Vikings need to chill. Okay, so point is, Vikings are not all one thing. The thing we think of Vikings, it's like, well, there are different groups, different tribes of them. There's Swedish, Danish, Norwegian, Finnish, Slavic. And the Vikings we're talking about today.
Oh, the Slavic ones, too.
They are, yeah. Because they were constantly pushing outward, trying to.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. They would just kind of find a new place and be like, this is now ours. And if you try to kill us, we'll absolutely dominate you.
Yeah.
They were good at rivers. They were good at, sieging from boats.
Seafaring. There was seafaring.
Civ 5. Then you know that Harold Bluetooth is dope at sieging with boats.
Speaking of shots for every episode that you have to take, every time we mention Civ, someone has to take a shot.
I think I've mentioned Civ on every episode.
I think it's at least 4 times we've mentioned it on the show.
So, one of these varieties of Vikings were a group of people known as the Rus, or the Volga Vikings, named after the river they conquered, or the Varangian Vikings. The Volga Vikings, the Rus, they lived in what is now northwestern Russia. And at the time, they lived along this trade route called the Volga trade route. So this trade route actually connected the Vikings, who had come from like Denmark and Sweden and pushed toward northwestern Russia. It connected them to these huge Islamic communities. So like the Byzantine Empire, this caliphate that we were talking about. And they were able to trade. The Vikings loved trading. They loved it. They like got such a high out of it. They loved trading. They loved Byzantine artwork. They loved Byzantine design. So they were always like, give me some of those rugs or whatever.
At least they got good taste.
They did. I think anything shiny. I think they were like, that's what I want.
I mean, they do tend to have a lot of pattern-based stuff like in the Viking artwork that I've seen, huh?
They do, yeah. It's very repetitive.
I wonder if that's like
patterns,
a crossover from that specifically.
Oh, interesting. We don't know because they didn't write anything. It makes me so mad.
Were they illiterate or they just didn't write it down?
They weren't illiterate. They just didn't value it as, like, it was more of a social, like, it was more acceptable to tell a tale orally and to, like, regale a bunch of people of your journeys rather than write it down. And it,
so they would have loved books on tape or podcasts. Yes. Is what you're saying, essentially.
They're us, minus the burning of mosques and monasteries. Everybody disagrees about like what language they spoke, where they came from, but what we do know is that they are Viking people, and they did settle on these banks of the Volga River in Russia. And so there's some positive. Before I get into all the negative reviews of these Vikings from this one guy, I want to say one of the positives. Was by, again, a Persian guy who is a traitor. And he was like, they have no estates.
Not a traitor, but like one who trades.
A traitor. Trades.
Yeah, okay.
He was a traitor. No, yeah, he was a traitor. And he said in his account of coming across some of these traitors, these Viking traitors, he said, they have no estates, villages, or fields. Their only business is to trade in sable, squirrel, and other furs. Their clothes are clean, and the men decorate themselves with gold armbands. They treat their slaves well, and they wear exquisite clothes, since they pursue trade with great energy.
How little we have changed over the course of 1,000 years.
Wait, explain.
The Persian guy is just like, listen, these guys are very clean, and they dress well, and they care about their appearance.
And that's all
that matters. Scruffy and gross. Yeah, that's all that matters. They wear nice shoes.
That's literally what he wrote. He's like, they like to trade and they look good.
They like to trade and they look good. I can work with these guys. Just could have been written yesterday, honestly.
Oh, isn't that funny how that kind of, I mean.
Culturally, it just sticks.
Yeah.
It's just been there for like well over 1,000 years.
Thousands of years.
We're very clean. I mean, we're very obsessive about being clean. Particularly Persian men.
On to the point.
Yes.
Now we're back. I laid some background where we are. We're in the Volga River Valley. We're in Baghdad. We're all over the place. Now we're back to Ahmad ibn Vadlan. I keep saying Vadlan because in Welsh, the one F is pronounced like a V. And he's a vaudevillian actor. Yeah. No. Ahmad ibn Vadlan. Ibn Vadlan was an Arab traveler and theologian, like I said. And he was part of this diplomatic party. And they were on their way to what are now known as the Bulgarians. So they, this caliphate that was based in Baghdad had just managed to, when you turn someone into a new religion, what's it called?
Converted.
Thank you. They had just managed to convert these old Bulgarians. And so what they would do would be like, okay, we converted these people, and now we need to go make sure they're following our rules. So this caliph, the caliph was like, you guys go, I'm going to send some eunuchs and some, this guy, the guy that's good at like scripture and stuff. And you're going to go make sure that they have all these laws and that they're actually following them. Because if they're going to be Muslim, they better be really good at it.
They better be good at it. Basically, they send like a hall monitor to check up on them.
Pretty much.
They're
pretty
like,
much.
You're the RA now for this section,
for this
nerd.
Section of, yeah, for Bulgaria. You're the RA for Bulgaria, and you got to make sure they're following Sharia law.
Following the
so,
rules.
They start traveling, and they do this huge, I have a map of like where they started and where they went. It's actually kind of cool. I'll post it.
Yeah.
And they made their way through Iran and Turkey and Ukraine all the way up into Russia. And when they arrived at the Bulgar capital, it was 922. And they get there, and our man, Ibn Fadlan, was like, here's some gifts from the caliphate, and here's some letters from him being like, please be good Muslims. And the king of the Bulgars was like, where's the money? And Ibn Fadlan was like, oh,
what
I don't,
money?
We don't have it. We don't have money. What are you talking about? Turns out they converted because they wanted the protection of the caliphate and hoped they would send them money because to build like a, doesn't matter. What matters is he wrote that really quickly and then got straight on to writing about Vikings because he didn't care about anything else. So he was like,
well, like mid-sentence.
Yes. He was like, anyway, he was mad. We didn't have money. Whatever, whatever, whatever. These guys we met. These guys are huge. he's like that. So here's what he said about them. I have seen the Rus as they came on their merchant journeys and encamped by the river. I have never seen more perfect physical specimens.
Oh.
Tall,
somebody was interested.
Hot. Tall as date palms, blonde and ruddy. They wear neither tunics nor caftans, but the men wear a garment which covers one side of the body and leaves one hand free. Each man has an axe, a sword, and a knife, and keeps each by him at all times. And he goes on to describe what the women wear. And
how there's
they
women
all...
there too, sure, why not?
No,
but
seriously.
My body quivered when I saw all these tall,
massive
date trees of men.
Just blue-eyed, scary, actually. They were actually kind of scared of them too. Like he goes on later to be like, they have like these crazy blue eyes and they're massive and I don't know what to do. So the women wear like neck rings of gold and beads. And then he says each man from the tip of his toes to his neck is covered in dark green tattoos. So,
oh, crazy.
He was like, whoa, this dude is, I mean, that kind of sounds cool, right? Like a
that
bunch
does
of like
sound
dark,
crazy. Yeah.
Emerald. I just love how he's tattooed. Like from the tips of his toes.
Tips of his toes. From the tips of his beautiful toes that were well manicured. All the way up to his braided hair.
And his horned helmet.
Horned helmet. I didn't realize they were fully tattooed.
Yeah, these ones were at least. We don't really know other ones.
They almost
anyway,
look like
so,
lizards if they're just all green.
They kind of remind, Anyway, so they start to spend time with these guys and he's observing them and what they do and he gets to watch them trade and how they converse and how they party and how they have sex and how
that's his favorite part. He's like, yeah, show me your ways.
Except he's repulsed.
Quote unquote.
No, he's disgusted. He goes on to say, they are the filthiest of all Allah's creatures. They do not clean themselves after excreting or urinating or wash themselves when in a state of ritual impurity and in parentheses after coitus and do not wash their hands after food. Indeed, they are all like asses that roam.
Man, I'll tell you what, I will have a rat prepare my dinner before I will have an ancient Viking do it. Changing my answer. Rat, 100% yes.
100%.
Viking, absolutely not.
He, not at all. He pees and poops and has sex and then doesn't wash his hands.
Oh.
Disgusting.
Just hand sanitizer, man, a little bit.
Kaveh, it gets way worse.
Oh, gross.
You ready for this?
I don't know if I am.
You're not. So he, as he observes them, he gets more and more grossed out. He's just like, I can't not write about this. He writes so many pages about how gross these people are. He's like, because, you know, like, Muslims are very, even like way back then, were very particular about cleanliness, and they would bathe like five times a day.
Yeah, it was part of their rituals. Yeah.
And yeah, and which is also why they didn't get the plague as much as the Europeans did.
Yeah.
Turns out washing your hands helps.
Yes.
But the Europeans were like, they must be the devil then. Love us. We're the worst.
Wash my ass with water? What's that? No. Toilet paper.
You're right. We're disgusted. See? 1,000 years later, nothing's changed. Still gross.
Listen, bidets are readily available now, and they're great.
They're fine.
That would be a good Viking brand bidets.
And it's nothing. The box is empty.
Yeah.
Ibn Fadlan is like totally not into them anymore. Now he's like, ugh.
He's and like, I thought I liked you, but now I don't.
You're so gross. You don't wipe
your butt. You ruined it.
And he's like, they're covered in hair. This is disgusting. Because another thing is that there was also, they have very like strict rules about hair and, you know, like,
not cutting
how to cut it and not cut it, or when to cut it and where you should have hair and what's gross and what's not. So he was fully grossed out, and he goes on to say, sorry.
Like, this ancient document is like, we unearthed this document of this man just talking shit about how disgusting these people are.
300 pages. And he like barely did his job. He's like, we met with the king, and it wasn't good. He wanted money. Anyway, these guys, he was like, it ruled his
thoughts.
Sounds
like a conversation with my mom after like a wedding. And then this person's outfit was ugly, and this person smelled weird, and this person's food was trash.
Okay, so here's what he says. This is so gross. Okay, quote, they cannot, of course, avoid washing their faces and their heads each day, which they do with the filthiest and most polluted water imaginable. I shall explain. Every day, the slave girl arrives in the morning with a large basin containing water, which she hands to her owner. He washes his hands and his face and his hair in the water. Then he dips his comb in the water and brushes his hair, blows his nose, and spits in the basin. There is no filthy impurity which he will not do to this water. I know that's so vague. When he no longer requires it, the slave girl takes the basin to the man beside him, and he goes through the same routine as his friend. She continues to carry it from one man to the next until she has gone around everyone in the house, with each of them blowing his nose and spitting, washing his face and hair in the basin.
Imagine how bad they smelled.
Oh my gosh, could you imagine? Smell. Sick. Imagine what that water looked like.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it. It's just like algae. It's not even a real weirder. Water, too.
And so he did also notice, exactly, it's like snot. He did notice that when one of them fell ill, that they would just quarantine him. And that was an interesting thing to him. And he was like, they just send him off into a tent and hope for the best. And if he comes back alive, everyone's like, yay! And if he doesn't, then they let the animals eat him. So they were,
I'm kind of into that.
Same. They were aware of like sickness and like, hey, don't get near us or we're all going to die. And he also noted
they weren't masking back then in the year 922.
No. He also noted they were having dinner and he was just watching everybody because sometimes he said, sorry, I love this man so much.
I know, he's so judgmental. I love it.
Gossip with him.
Oh, there's so much tea.
He says they're addicted to alcohol, which they drink day and night. Sometimes one of them dies with the cup still in his hand. So,
dear Lord.
He's sitting there watching them eat dinner, and sometimes they're just so drunk they die. And he noted that they would just pass women around during dinner. And
Dinner?
Yes. And everyone got a turn, and he was like,
like in the middle, like you're eating your sausage pie, and then you're like, hold on, and then you put it aside, and you take her to town, and then pass her over?
Absolutely.
Think of the indigestion.
I know. I can't do that on just eating.
Or during eating.
That's true. Anyway, he watched them trade and he thought it was interesting. They were really into trading. They were very shrewd traders. And they would, they almost kind of did it because it was like a novelty. They were like, yeah, we're going to trade. We could easily kill these guys, but we're going to trade with them.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
I get that. It's like, you know, because getting the deal, getting the deal fun. It's the fun part of it. Yeah.
That part of your brain that loves, you know,
negotiating.
Triumph. Yeah. Negotiating. Another interesting thing he noticed, this is actually really helpful for us historically because we don't have very much firsthand account of Viking burials and Viking funeral things. So one of their, while he was staying with them, one of their important men died and he watched one of the most unhinged ceremonies that even now I'm like, what? So he goes on to say this dude dies.
Okay.
And the first step is that, just picture this guy. This guy's just kind of watching, like, what the?
Okay.
They place him in a grave, and okay. No one goes near it for 10 days. They put a canopy over it, and they let him sit in this grave for 10 days, buried. You know, the place I like to be.
Right.
And second step is, 9/11. While he's in there,
I'll just put it 9/11. In there because you said
there
yours.
It is. Yeah. There, take your drinks, everybody.
We got
everybody.
It out of the way. Yeah.
So five. After that,
in the grave for 10 days, yeah.
While he's in the grave, they do all these preparations and they gather his possessions and they divide them up between his family. And then I think they use some of them to like trade for alcohol and they get so wasted that sometimes people die. They get just blasted. Like he went on for a long time about how gross it was, how drunk they were. And during this feast where they're all getting drunk, someone gets up and says, okay, everybody, all the slaves, all of this guy's slaves, who among you will die with him?
Oh,
and
no.
It becomes like this thing where they're like, no, I'm going to die with him. It's me. And it's some of them volunteer. And once you say, I will, you're held to that. If you go back on it, they'll kill you. So you have to. So you're either going to die
either
a coward.
Way.
Yeah. You either die a coward or you walk up to the person who kills you. Anyway. So it's usually one of the slave girls, you know, one of the ones that carries their snotty basins of water around. So in this instance, a slave girl said, I'll do it. And the next step is they go to the bank of a river. Ibn Fadlan goes to the bank of a river and he notices that they're preparing this big boat. And this is where you start to see like, oh yeah, Viking ship burial. They start, these slave girls covering it with cushions and there's this giant woman who's old and gigantic. He calls her a giantess. And she's known as the angel of death. And she is this, like, imagine you're like, I'm the biggest person in this tribe. I guess I'll grow up to be the angel of death. Anyway, she's this old, old, gigantic lady who goes and like dresses the body. And she is also responsible for killing the slave girl who volunteers. So remember, the guy's still on the ground. They've chosen the slave girl. They have this boat ready. So this
Don't
old lady, the old crone, like spreads, like makes it look pretty. And then... And then she's like, okay, slave girl, get over here. It's time for you to die. And she just straight up kills her and puts her on this boat. And they then go to his grave and they pull him out of the earth. They dig him up. And at this point, he's like very decayed.
Yeah.
And he's like turned black from the cold earth. And they fill his grave with like fruit and mead and mandolins. And then they put him in there with his dead slave girl. And dress him up nice. They bring all of his weapons and then they take two horses and they ride the horses till the horses die of exhaustion.
What?
Yeah. And then they cut those in half, the horses, put them on the boat.
Oh.
Then they bring cows and they cut them in two and put them on the boat. So so if you could picture, there's this boat full of just carcasses of animals and a slave girl, food, cushions, couches, beautiful things, Byzantine designs, and the cold dead body of the chieftain. And then they bring some more animals.
So this is when it's the chief, not like just every funeral. This is when it's like a big.
This is
a big deal when this person dies,
or like a more important guy, like a warrior or something.
Yeah,
but like,
this isn't like your run of the mill lower guy.
If it's just a regular guy, they just throw they just let you get eaten by animals.
River.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, I forgot to mention the part that he writes a lot about because he's truly deeply disturbed by it. Before they sacrifice the girl, everyone gets a turn.
Oh, of course.
Of course. And they all say it. The ritual is she goes tent to tent and she's like, I'm about to die, so let's do this. And each guy has his, you know, takes his turn and says, say to thy lord, I have done this out of love for thee. So
deeply upsetting.
Very. So pretty much they bang this lady and they're like, tell him that I love him when you get to wherever you're going. Tell him I did this for you because for him because I love him. And then they kill her. Anyway, you can go read about, if you want, you can go read the details of this, but it's truly horrific.
I think I'm okay. I think I got it.
I've just skimmed the surface.
Oh.
I did not go into the details of what happened.
Remind me, the Vikings, what's their relationship to the afterlife at this time?
Probably, I don't know. We don't know. They go on to be heroes, like, you know, whatever it is, Valhalla.
The assumption, though, I think for most of the world here is that there's something else, right? It's not like,
yes.
They're not atheists, obviously. They're like,
no.
It's sort of like this Egyptian thing where you're like, we're going to bury you with all your shit. So when you go to the next life, you'll have all this stuff.
And yes, exactly. And Valhalla or whatever, you're going to be.
Right.
You're going to be in paradise.
So even this, theoretically, this slave girl is like, cool, I get to die and go to this other place. So I'm not like.
It's an honor.
Carrying around snot water a bunch as much, in theory,
no.
Right?
In theory,
that
it's
could
an
be
honor.
The only reason I could think of that anyone would want to even volunteer to do this.
I don't have to watch them. I don't know how to be passed around.
Or are
anymore.
You just doing? Are you a slave girl in the afterlife? Like, do you continue doing this?
Oh, interesting. I don't know.
You got to do this job forever?
I should
just
look
awful.
That up.
It's deeply upsetting.
I'm so
deeply
sorry.
Deeply upsetting.
I'm editing.
Hot
this.
Take. I don't like slavery. Hot
no,
take.
Me neither.
It really upsets me.
Hot take. I also don't like it. Like, I'm just reading this dude's account, and he is so horrified by it that he's speechless. He's just watching this, being like, sorry, we just bury our people.
Yeah.
Man or woman. Ooh. We do whatever we want. And so he's this guy who comes from a very structured civilization that has cities and government and religious like orders and funeral rites where you put them in the ground and you have a funeral. And he's watching this poor woman and this guy and everyone, this lady who's this gigantic lady. Imagine being like a shorter Middle Eastern dude. And you're like, that woman is 7 feet tall.
You're right.
And she's called the Angel of Death. Like, I'd be like, please, Kate, let me go home. And so they put her on the thing with them, and then they light it all on fire, and that's where the boat burns. So
I hate to say this, but at least she's killed, because I thought you were going to be like, then she goes on there and then she gets lit on fire, which seems
no.
That's where I thought this was going. So
the Angel of Death kills her. Anyway, so that's the funeral thing, and he was just like, ugh. And he talks about how he's standing next to one of the roosts during the funeral. And he hears the Roost guy talking to his interpreter. And he's like, well, what did he just say to me? And the interpreter is like, he said, they, you guys, the Arab community, are stupid. And I asked, so here's what he says. So I asked why. He said, you go and cast into the earth the people whom you both love and honor most among men. Then the earth, creeping things and worms, devour them. We, however, let them burn for an instant. And accordingly, he enters into paradise at once in that very hour. And then he burst into immoderate laughter. So this Viking's like, you guys bury your people? That's stupid.
Losers, yeah.
All the while, this poor guy is just like, huh?
What is happening?
We're stupid? Anyway, so that's the funeral. Now, there's 300 pages of this. So if any of you want to go read some of this, I don't recommend it. It's disgusting.
Did you read the whole thing?
Yes, I did.
Really?
That's
impressive.
No, not all 400 pages, because it's this is an edited. The one I found on the University of California Press has like condensed, because he also writes a lot about like day-to-day things, which I actually find fascinating. Like, here's what we ate, and here's how many people are here, and here's who's sick. Like, I like that kind of stuff. So if you want to find the real one, it's very long. But it is a great translation. And the way he writes is very good. And you can really feel his disgust in every word he says about these people. Anyway, I just love the idea that like modern day white supremacists are like, we want to be like the Vikings. And it's like,
better stop showering and just putting snot in your face.
You better become the worst people on earth because I just love that their idea of like this romanticized, like, yeah. Perfect race. They're just these gigantic freaks who literally drink themselves to death at dinner and then are horrible to their slaves. I hate the word slave. I hate that. I hate saying, like, yeah. Even talking about like a person being owned is so yucky.
Yeah, anyway, it's very upsetting.
You good?
Am I good? Yeah, why?
Yeah, just grossed you out.
No, I was really like involved. I was very emotionally like invested in your story.
Yeah.
Also, I was trying to not interject as much as I do every episode and derail it. So I was trying to be better about it.
No, I like it.
No, I know, but you were on. You had a rhythm. I'm saying I was trying to like play it out.
Okay.
I'm smart enough to know that like I don't have to interject.
Point is, if you want to hear more about this, have you ever listened to what's his name?
Dan Carlin?
Hardcore Histories?
Yeah, Dan Carlin.
Yeah, he does a really cool, like, two-parter on of the Vikings and goes into, like, everything. He mentions this guy's journal, and you can also see, I mean, this is just one account, so obviously they're not all like this. There's also other people who've written about the Vikings very favorably.
Hashtag not all Vikings.
Hashtag not all Vikings. Drink each other's, or bathe in each other's snot. But that series is really good, and it's free on Spotify or whatever, wherever you get your podcasts. And
wherever you get your podcasts.
You get to like actually hear about some other accounts of them and the way they worshipped and did stuff. And this is just one. This one was important because it's a very rare firsthand account. And
okay.
I just love picturing this poor guy just being like, what?
Horrified.
I went to school to learn about the Quran, and now I'm watching this dude like
slit the throat of this poor woman. And then chop a horse in half that got ridden to death and then throw a cow on top of it.
And then tell me I'm stupid.
Tell me I'm stupid and then light them all on fire.
Anyway, that's my horrific tab. There it is.
That was quite the tab.
It was horrific.
Okay, let's pull up our windows.
I feel like I made you go speechless a little bit.
It was a little bit shocking. I felt like I was literally that guy writing the PDF story.
Okay, you ready to close it? Do you want to?
Yeah. Oh, what are we gonna do? We're gonna do a sound of like a arrow hitting something and catching on fire. Should we give our tabs a Viking funeral?
Yes, we should.
Okay, we're going to get a Viking funeral. So hopefully we have fire sounds.
We put him on the boat.
Yeah.
And then
it goes
out
to water.
We shoot the boat or whatever.
Yeah, you shoot the boat with the
flaming
arrow.
Don't include the killing of the other animals in there.
No.
Unless you want to, Alyssa, but please don't, actually.
In our version, the slave girl escapes and she's free and she gets to go live her life and not have to deal with any of this.
And find a loving, beautiful family somewhere. I don't know.
Or not, because not everybody has to have a family if they don't want to.
Not everybody wants to get married.
She can do whatever she wants to do.
We are projecting modern-day ideals on a 900-year, 2000, sorry. I'm so scattered from this. I can't stop thinking about that poor girl. We're projecting modern ideals onto an 1,100-year-old story.
You ready?
Okay, let's get the arrows ready. The burning arrows.
The quivers. Okay. You ready to close?
Yeah.
Okay.
Three.
Two.
Well, are we both doing it?
We're supposed to. Okay, sorry. You number. You go ahead.
No. We both do it. We both do it. Okay, ready? Three.
Two. One.
There
gone
it goes.
Forever.
It's out to sea. Burning.
Okay. That was. Wow.
Yeah.
That was a story.
That was the Michelin Man. And the Vikings.
I want a Michelin Man burial when I die.
Two very upsetting giant white creatures. Michelin Man and the Vikings.
Moving on.
You want a Michelin Man funeral? Is that what you just said?
Yes.
What is that? What is that?
I think someone removes a tire from the center of my chest. I don't know what else happens.
And lets you die.
And lets me just die once the tire comes out. Moving on to our burning overtime. Okay. So our listener emails.
Yeah. Yes,
our first
emails.
Listener email is from someone named Lottie.
Okay.
I don't know where Lottie is, but as I always say, they're from someplace far away.
Is that a reference to something?
Yes, please I'm going to ignore myself at this point. It's a Simpsons reference.
No.
Snrub.
Oh, I am. I need to be stripped of all of my cool points forever watching any Simpsons. I don't remember anything.
It's okay. It doesn't matter.
It does.
Hi, Hannah and Kaveh. I had to write in after this week's episode and the panda tab when Kaveh mentioned that Charmin should have a panda bear mascot. I used to work in commercial animation. The studio I worked for a few years ago did a Pull-Ups 2D animated ad with a little girl and a panda. It's adorable, and I'll link below. The job wrapped up, and a couple weeks later, or like a month later, the client came back to us freaking out and says that the panda needed to be switched out for a purple bear. Apparently, there was some disgusting alt-right conspiracy theory they found about Democrats' children and panda bears.
Do not recommend
looking further into it. The necessary changes were made, but yes, Kaveh, you're correct. If it wasn't for that wild theory, pandas would make great mascots for incontinence. The panda and purple versions do both exist online still. Love the podcast. Best, Lottie.
How come the alt-right ruins everything? Again, Nazis
they do
ruining
ruin
things.
All kinds. Yeah, I'm like, this is a very like white supremacist heavy episode of stuff we don't like. I did watch the ads. They're beautifully animated, so wonderful job, Lottie. They look great.
Oh, cool.
We will link to both versions of them in the show notes. Fun fact, despite their warning, was like, I do need to look up what this is and couldn't find it. And Google was like, we don't know what you're talking about. And I'm pretty sure I'm flagged and the FBI is going to come to my house at some point.
Oh, no. I think you were already flagged.
Yeah, that's true. I was already flagged, but now I'm probably flagged for I hate this. You're like, I'm just like, what? And I'm like, I forgot that I have to think about stuff before I actually just genuinely am looking something up to be like, what the hell even is this? It seemed like there wasn't a whole lot about it just from like the quick Google search I was trying to do, which is probably for the best.
But enough to make them be like, we can't do this.
I just had never gotten something where immediately the response, because I tried to change the words around. And then one of them, it was just like, there's nothing for that on the internet. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I've never seen that before.
You're in trouble.
So yeah, if I'm arrested before the next show, just so you guys know, it was unfortunately because I
Lottie's
was trying
fault.
To follow up. Lottie literally warned us to not do this.
Oh, that's true.
Because I'm an idiot. I was like, well, I got to look it up now.
Lottie should know what podcast they're listening to.
That's true.
A one
you
where
do
we
know
look
that
things
I'm
up.
Dumb.
And I'm not much dumb smart. I'm not much smarter.
Not much smart.
And I'm not much smart than you. All right.
Anyway, check out the ads. They look great. They're animated wonderfully. Yes, it actually is very sad that we don't get to have panda bears with toilet paper.
Yeah.
I still have a dream.
My turn. Hi, Kaveh and Hannah. My name is Jude, and I'm living in Albany, New York. I have to say my tab is actually a wiki page from the Wikipedia app because I use it more than a web browser to go on some research rabbit holes. Have you ever used the Wikipedia app?
Of course.
I don't ever use it.
Really? You only search through the web browser?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Look, it worked for me then. It works for me now.
Hey, man, I'm not judging. I'm just surprised.
No, I know. Remember, everything's in tech. Okay, my most recent topic I looked up was on the TV show Thunder Alley, which ran from 1994 to 1995 on ABC. I've never watched it, but I have a special interest in television shows and sitcoms. Do you ever watch it?
No, I don't. No, I don't think I'm aware of Thunder Alley.
Me neither. I was listening to a podcast episode from Pod Meets World, a podcast from the former stars of one of my favorite 90s sitcoms, Boy Meets World.
Boy Meets World, right.
Yeah. They had on a guest, Andrew Keegan, who was once on an episode of Boy Meets World. He was also on the show Thunder Alley and talked about his time on it. The reason I looked it up was because I couldn't figure out what the show was based on about the conversation. I assumed Thunder Alley would be about an all-kid bowling league at a bowling alley called Thunder Alley. It was actually about a retired race car driver named Gil and his daughter Bobby, who comes back to her hometown to live with her father, bringing her three children with her. The family moves into Gil's home, which is above his specialty racing garage called Thunder Alley.
Thunder Alley.
I would have never guessed that in a billion years. Andrew Keegan, who was about 15 at the time, played a local boy who helped the garage. And other notable cast members were Haley Joel Osment, who was 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
And at the time, and one of Gil's grandchildren. He was also the Icy Dead People kid on The Sixth Sense, yep. Also, Ed Asner, who I know as Carl from Pixar's Up, played
is
Gil.
It?
Thanks for the reading, and please excuse my lengthiness. Brevity is not my strong suit. Jude. I truly love what Jude wrote because I think they really captured what it is what it is to fixate on one thing and follow that thing through Wikipedia, yeah. no matter what. Like, that is how my brain works, too. It's like, well, then why is this this? How does this
then
relate
why is
to
this?
That?
Yeah, and, more questions.
And I think their tab was a perfect example of that. Thank you, Jude.
Hey, Jude, thank you for the tab.
I bet they're going to love that.
Probably never heard that before.
Never heard that.
Ever. You got a tab or something like that. Don't make a tab. Thank you, Jude. If you are listening and you have a tab that you closed recently because you were inspired by this show, please send it to us and let us know. We are 500opentabs@gmail.com. That's 500opentabs@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Let us know what your tab was. Give us a little brief little anecdote about it. More importantly, include the link and let us know where you're from, because we like to know where our fans are. So please do that.
Otherwise, I'm just going to picture you
just in a Viking funeral, decaying in the ground, waiting to get dressed and put on a boat to catch fire with two horse halves.
You're still really, really focused on that.
I'm going to have a traumatizing weekend, but thanks for the nightmares.
This is one of those things where, like, I read about it and I was like, this is going to be a good tab. And then as I said,
it's a great tab.
Oh, no. No, it is. It is. But it's like, oh, this was different in my head somehow.
No, it's great because it made me like quiet for most of the episode. I just was
I've never seen you look so, like, you sat there just like listless for a minute.
Every time I wanted to make a joke, I was like, that's sad. I can't make that joke.
It's all awful. It's so
terrible.
Bad.
I was like, I don't want to make light of this poor slave girl getting like her throat slit after she got taken advantage. I'm just like, Jesus.
Horrible. No, everything about it. I should have put a trigger warning because that was truly upsetting. And if you don't want to hear more of that, don't read the rest
don't
of the account.
Do not follow that link.
Do not. It's way worse.
It gets even worse. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We are 500 Open Tabs on Instagram and on Twitter. And of course, we keep mentioning this, but we are on YouTube. So please go subscribe. You can see the video. You can see the images that we reference. We do our fun little shorts and stuff. Additionally, by this time, in case I don't remember which episode we mentioned it on, but we are weekly in case we didn't mention on the last one. I think we did, but it doesn't hurt to remind people.
We're doing weekly now, so more of this.
I'm not even going to say it again because then we're going to go. Don't. More Michelin Man stories. More unhinged, removing a tire from the center of your body.
But hey, they helped us win World War II, Michelin Man.
They did.
Michelin Man.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
Yes.
Ahmed Ibn Badlan, thank you for your service.
Thank you for your disgust.
Thank you for knowing exactly what was gross. I was also going to say you could follow us, too. I'm Hannah Hill. I'm on everything. And I also wanted to finally get to talk about it, but I wrote a book. And
what?
It's up for...
I'm joking. I know.
I know. I'm laughing because that was beautiful delivery. I wrote a book. It's up for pre-sale now. So if you go Google my name or search Cat People by Hannah Hillam, you can buy it anywhere. You buy books or whatever, you know, Amazon. Do Amazon.
I assume it's excellent. I have not gotten an advanced copy yet, but I assume it's great. That's also a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I assume I will get an advanced copy of some sort to be able to see it.
Yeah, duh. Oh, wait. Duh. You have to buy it.
Damn it.
No, you'll get...
We're all about trades here. That's what this whole episode's about. My people are all about trades. We like trading.
And my people are all about... No, I can't.
Anyway, yes, go check out Hannah's book, Cat People. We're very excited.
Yeah, it'll come out October 8th.
October 8th, mark your calendars.
Yeah, right before the election. Anyway, where can people follow you?
I'm at Kavitaharian on Twitter, at PermaFriends on Instagram. And of course, I'm on Blue Sky, and that's basically all the places that I am. I do not have a cool book coming out in October, but I'm trying to have a book ready for Comic-Con. So maybe I'll beat you to the punch and have a new book, but
you
it
will
be as widely available as yours. Because I'm a mere mortal doing our best.
We're all doing our best, Kavi.
We're all doing our best. Thank you, guys. Of course, lastly, don't forget to join our Discord.
Yeah.
We got a lot of members in the Discord, which I'm like, way that's more than weird.
And they have like a community and like, they it's talk. Weird.
Yeah. I thought it would be like five people in the Discord. And it's, I'm like, oh, there's a whole conversation's happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are sharing drawings, which I really like to see. That's a lot of fun. The doodle stab is fun.
We should draw more.
We should. It's not about our drawings. It's about their drawings.
Somebody told me, did you read that comment? Someone left a comment that was like, you guys should draw each other's tabs.
Yes, I saw that yesterday. It's actually really funny.
I mean, let's not do this episode. I'll draw the Michelin man.
Yeah, right?
You have a pass, but it would be fun to like draw the things we describe to each other. Like,
maybe we could do that on a live stream of some sort someday.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, guys, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
And as always, keep it Josie.
Keep it Josie.
Keep it.